to Canucks Central at noon.
Now works into the high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Pacioretty cut into the slot. Forced wide by Tanev. Play back to the back door. And Markstrom absolutely stoned Paul Stastny.
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650. Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It's Mick Nizar and Israel Fair stepping in for Scott Rintoul today, who just finishes up on the airwaves and just getting away for a bit in preparing for the Minnesota Wild and the Vancouver Canucks qualifying series. Hey, we need all the prep time we can get because it is go time, Izzy. I'm psyched.
Yeah, buddy.
Whew, it's been over 4 months, and we're obviously making big moves. I don't know if you heard yesterday, for those that are listening. Izzy, I know you were all up on it. Yannick Hansen, Ed Jovanovski will join our Canucks broadcast here on the home of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, and they'll be part of pregame intermissions, bringing you the best content during this hopefully lengthy playoff run.
Yeah, it's awesome. Really cool. Really cool to see. And
it feels like these guys are kind of buying into the new era of the Canucks playoffs run, right? And hopefully this side of things comes. It feels like past generations have supported current generations, and we're seeing it again now as they usher in this new era, obviously. And it's been much spoken about with Pedersen and Hughes and whatnot, and of this new face of the Canucks franchise moving forward. It'll be interesting to see how these guys factor in for all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be, for fans anyway, a reminder of sometimes it takes a while for these things to build. Yannick Hansen, part of the Canucks for a very long time, part of obviously the ascent to playing in the Stanley Cup final. And with Jovo, those teams went through some pretty epic playoff battles that Canucks fans, even the series that didn't go their way, they might not remember them fondly, but they certainly have strong memories about them. And I mean, one of those series specifically was against the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, dating back to 2003, it's going to be you know, because Ed Jovanovski's on every week on the starting lineup here on Sportsnet 650. Now seeing it again in a Minnesota Wild series, you know, the flashbacks of what happened way back when, right? That'll be interesting to see how he recants the story. We're actually going to dip back to 2003 here in a couple of minutes. Dwayne Roleson, yes, the legendary goalie, will join us here in just a couple of minutes. And, you know, we'll rehash a couple of things from 2003, get his perspective on, you know, where goaltending has gone. Because it's an interesting conversation because, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, it was all about the goaltender, right? Late 80s, it was, are you good enough to make a save, right? A key save. Can you do enough to, you know, keep the score manageable? And then dead puck era, all that happens, and it's Hasek, it's Brodeur, it's Patrick Waugh. You can even have a scary season from Jim Carrey, right? It's that. And the emphasis of goaltending a little bit has, I don't know if it's dissipated or it's just been more contextualized.
The game's changed, that's for sure. The technology and the equipment has made drastic strides in that time as well. And I think we've seen across the league, the coaching catch up to that. And there's a system, there's a process for the highest level goalies to follow. I mean, we've seen it right here in Vancouver. Jacob Markstrom comes into the NHL or comes into professional hockey as a big time goalie prospect. There's huge expectations for him. And it took a while. It took, I mean, he even had a great run in the American Hockey League before being traded to the Canucks. And it was a process for him, because there are a lot more, I think, moving pieces and a lot more technical aspects of the game that go into that position. And the coaching and the analysis of that position at this point is so strong. It really is. There's so much thought that goes into getting the most out of a goalie that I think if we're talking about trends, one of the more recent ones is we don't really see the 70 game goalie anymore. There's a couple teams that are still doing that, but tandems seem to be in vogue, unless you're a team like, let's say, the Winnipeg Jets and Connor Hellebuck with the season that he had, where you feel really comfortable having him out there pretty much every night. And obviously that changes a little bit in the playoffs with a few more days off and time for the goalie to recover. But that must be just another adjustment for that position that we spend a lot of time talking about.
For sure. And the coaching aspect of it is huge too. We'll get into that now with 600 NHL games played and helping out with the Victoria Royals now as a skills goalie coach. It is Dwayne Rollison joining us on the line here on Sportsnet 650 Canucks Central. Dwayne, thanks a lot for taking us on some time to join us here today.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, guys.
We do want to get to the 2003 series and your thoughts of what's going on currently, but we're just having a conversation of how far goaltending has come and really the emphasis on the position. When you coach it now, what do you take from how you were coached and you think, boy, it really has changed and I was taught certain things that I would never teach now?
Well, I actually, to be honest with you, I sort of don't like the way some of them are being coached now or taught now. And I try to eliminate a couple of things in my goalies. The reverse HV, it's designed for one specific play in a game, and it just gets overused. Like things like that, that in the modern game, way the guys are teaching, some things that fundamentally, I always relay it to a house. You know, the stronger the foundation, the better they are. So if you can move well and you have a good stick and hands, then you can build as high as you want to go. But right now, I think we're almost over coaching goalies to a point that we're hurting them more than helping them. Just my beliefs anyways.
Well, that's interesting too, because I do find sometimes that's in sports, we try to have like a cookie cutter way of developing athletes and tailoring how to coach someone to the individual is actually really interesting. And it felt like there were more styles of goalies, 20, 25 years ago, whereas now we're becoming more uniform when it comes to goaltending. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is 100% correct. You don't have the Hasics anymore who are willing to, do whatever it takes to make a save and playing behind them for 2 years and trying to figure out why he was doing stuff and building a relationship with him to tell me. It's pretty much the reason why he did what he did was he was able to read the game. He knew what players were doing before they did. And so that's why you would see him dive and, be reaching out or poke checking guys where, I think the way that the game's being taught now, we sort of lose that in our goalies. They don't read the game as much. And you see a lot of guys just like, well, it went in, it was supposed to hit me. For me as a coach, but also playing the game, it's frustrating for me to see. And it's just, I want to see guys that, for me, the guys that I like are the guys that are able to read plays, the Carey Prices, the Holpes, the guys that are at the NHL level are there for a reason. I think at the youth level and even some spots in major junior and college, they overteach and don't get back to, read the game, read what's going on, what's the player's next best play, and then react to that. And, we're taking that away from some of the younger kids, the youth, and we're hurting their development in the long run.
Dwayne, with the Canucks and the Wild set to take on a playoff series, a play-in series this weekend, there's been a lot of revisiting of that 2003 series between Yoar Wild and the Canucks. What do you remember about a series that, that had a lot of peaks and valleys, and obviously your team ended up on the winning end?
What I remember most is the back-to-back Game 6 and Game 7. We were in Mini, and we flew into Vancouver, and when we arrived in Vancouver, there was a car that was sitting right outside the FBO there, you know, huge Canucks flag on it, and it was pretty much driving right beside our bus all the way in into the city, and it was just crazy. It was honking, and it was, you know, great support, and the boys were all laughing, and you know, we had a good time coming back into the city, but, you know, that was the number one thought. And then, you know, in Game 7, you know, I wasn't right there, but Willie Mitchell said that Bertuzzi said, you know, hopefully you got your golf clubs back, because it was 2-1, I think, at the time, about halfway through the second period. And sure enough, we were able to get the lead and hold on. And the handshake after was, there's some chuckles, I'm sure, between Willie and Todd at the time. But, you know, for us, it was, you know, it was a battle of will. You know, we were able to, you know, we did it the next series as well, but we're down 3-1, and just being able to come back and beat a strong club, you know, well-coached club, great goaltending by Klutsch, and, you know, with the Twins and then Trevor, you know, the defense core, like, there was a solid team, and we were just fortunate enough to get some bounces and win Game 7.
We had Wes Walls on the station today, and also Todd Bertuzzi. I'm curious. I think we need you to be the deciding vote here, right? Because hate builds quickly in a playoff series, and it can come from any form. And there's a famous story in Vancouver of Todd Bertuzzi interacting with Minnesota Wild fans of, why are you buying tickets? The series is going to be over. And Wes Walls told a different story of how the Wild found motivation of the Canucks not wearing helmets in warm-up skate. Do you have any recollection of this?
Yeah, well, there's probably about 10 different things that sort of went on in the series that sort of we internally used as fire. And, you know, they had such a great season and, you know, rightfully so. But, you know, we're always taught, and, you know, when you look back at the Wild at the time, we're pretty much every single guy on a team was a third, fourth line guy somewhere else, played, myself included, being in the minors forever and having to take a stint back down to the minors to come back up. But guys that had to go through a lot of adversity. So, you know, for us at that time, we just like, okay, well, let's use this. And, you know, everyone's writing us off. Let's use this to propel ourselves to the little things to win a series. And cliche as it is, it's realistically what we did is we weren't caring that we're down 3-1. We were just caring about, you know, winning that next shift and winning the next battle and all the little things that went into a game that, you know, all the guys that had to bring lunch pails and hard hats to the game, in all of our careers, you know, that's, you know, to stay playing, that's what our guys did. And, you know, the end of it, we were able to come out ahead, and you know, it was fun. You know, I was sad for the guys that had such a great season, but at the same time, it was for us as a team and as a group, it was definitely rewarding.
You mentioned the fans in Vancouver, and obviously this year, given the circumstances, there's not going to be that back and forth and that impact from fans in the stands and a crowd noise and just the, I guess, an entire city getting behind the team. It's going to be a little bit more focused on what the teams are generating. What kind of preparation would you be going for playing in this kind of environment where there's no crowd and you really have to rely on your team to pick up your game and be in a place where you're ready to compete?
Yeah, you know, as a pro athlete, you sort of get used to tuning things out. Obviously, the emotion of the fans and things like that sort of drive you a little bit, but for the most part, you have to tune things out for the good and for the bad. When I was growing up, and I hate to say when I was growing up, but there wasn't a sports psychologist on staff until I got to Edmonton, and we never learned the mental side of the game. And all these guys now have somebody they've worked with in the past, and the teams have people to be able to help guys through these emotional roller coaster rides of the spikes from the fans and the downs from the fans and media. You know, it's a big part. And, you know, so these guys now are so tuned in to the way they need to play without outside noise. And, you know, with the NHL pumping in the music and the fan noise and all that stuff, you know, it's not the same, but it's going to feel similar once the games start meaning something. You'll see the emotions start rising pretty quickly between the players, and they know what's on the line. And, you know, and like I said earlier, with their mental makeup and how they've been able to learn to deal with blocking things and doing things the right way to have success, you'll see guys rising to the top. And still, it'll be, I think, for the fans' perspective, it'll be pretty close to real playoff series.
NHL netminder Dwayne Rollison joining us. He of 600 plus games in the big league. One thing that a lot of fans here are looking at is, you know, Vancouver Canucks, their leaders are young players: Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser. It's their first foray into the playoffs. And there's the old adage of, you know, you learn how to play in the playoffs. Is that more about a physical thing to you, or is that more of a mental thing? Because I look at the playoffs and I think, you know, there's so many highs and lows, and the swings are so dramatic and quick that if you're able to just, you know, stay in your head basically and keep focused, that helps more so than anything. So is it a physical thing that we can see on the ice, or is it an internal thing?
It's both. It definitely is both. You know, physically, the team that's healthy usually wins. You know, with the big break here, everyone is pretty close to being healthy. If I read the injury reports correctly, everyone's pretty much healthy now. So that gets thrown out the window. It's now the mind game. It's the guys that are able to park out, making a mistake that, you know, cost a goal or cost a penalty where that led to a goal, and being able to forget about those things and being able to go out and play your best hockey. Even though something bad just happened the shift before, or even in that shift, and trying to forget about it. And I think that's part of the, you know, the sports psychology that most of the teams now have, someone on staff that, you know, these guys are so more prepared mentally than the teams that I played on and the guys that played before us. You know, we never had that. We just went and did our thing. And, but all these guys now have learned all those traits. And, you know, so now it's just a battle of will at the end of it. And most of it is mental.
There's a feeling that in these playoffs, because of the play-in and the fact that there's been a four-month layoff, that there's the potential for a sleeper team, a surprise team to go on a run. Obviously, the Oilers team that you were on in 2006 really caught fire during the playoffs, and by the end of it was playing some really exceptional hockey. Do you think that the circumstances, the layoff, and the fact that some of these teams are going to be kind of gearing up at the same time leads to the potential to have a team maybe go all the way that we're not expecting?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, getting back to that, like, look at the Canucks, where they were health-wise before this shutdown. You know, they had two goalies that were hurt, and, you know, they had some players that were hurt, and now they're all healthy again. So, you know, just using the Vancouver Canucks, like, I think Montreal was that way. Columbus isn't quite fully healthy yet, but they're close. Like, there's a lot of those teams that were having great years, and all of a sudden they ran into the injury bug. Now everyone's healthy. So now it's going to make for some interesting games here moving forward. And, you know, and like I said earlier, playoffs is usually the team that's healthy wins. And, you know, we got everyone healthy. So it's, like I said earlier, it's going to be pretty fun to watch all these teams that are healthy playing for Stanley Cup. And I think the intensity is just going to escalate pretty quick and pretty high here. And, you know, I think the fans are in for a good playoffs.
former NHL goalie Dwayne Rolison joining Canucks Central here, Bick Nizar and Israel Fair. You've also played 50 playoff games. When does it click for a team? Like, when do you know, okay, hey, we're going on a run? Is it middle of the second round, or do you got to win that second round? Because you've been on some famous runs. When does the team start to believe?
That's the biggest thing is the belief, right? Once the team believes, and for us in against the Canucks, it was I think game three, I think we started believing then. We're rolling, we're pushing back, we're actually generating some offensive zone play. We're creating a momentum ourselves, and we started believing that, you know what, we can hang with these guys. They were one of the best teams in regular season, or the best team in regular season. We just made it in. We limped into the playoffs, and hell, we can hang with these guys. And then all of a sudden we started believing, and guys were doing the extra little thing to have success with blocking shots, getting pucks out. Same thing with the Oilers playing against Detroit. Obviously everyone knows Detroit's history and the great players that they had. I think they had 5 or 6 Hall of Famers on the team. And, for us, just clinching a playoff spot, second last game of the year, just, going into game one and taking on the overtime, I think right then and there, we believed that we could hang with them. But we didn't fully believe until game two that we could hang with them. It's like, okay, we might have got lucky game one, but game two, we're right there with them, and we're battling with them and owning the play for most of the game. And it was just like, hey, we got these guys. We can beat these guys. And our coaching staff, they just kept on, filling a lot of confidence into everyone's play. I wasn't on the bench, but it was like talking to the guys after the game. They're like, holy smokes, our coaching staff is so positive. And, I think that's, that was Jock LeMaire as well in Minnesota. Like, as soon as you get the guys believing, then also the coach is pumping up guys with confidence. As soon as they're coming back, great play and all those little things. It just now lifts the players up, and, then the sky's the limit. And it's just being healthy and trying to grind through the rest of the games.
We'll get you out on this, Dwayne. That 0-3 series, or that whole run for you guys, you and Manny were kind of ahead of the curve as far as goalie tandems. It's so in vogue now. How do you handle that? And is that something you could see happening in this upcoming playoffs, or maybe even beyond?
Yeah, I could see it happening with a couple teams for sure. The whole thing with us, with Manny and I, we did play, Jock had the teams that we played well against. We played against those teams in regular season. And then, playoffs, I started against Colorado. Then I tweaked my groin pretty bad in game one, played game two, or started game two, and ended up getting pulled because I couldn't really do anything. And against Van, I was still limping pretty good until – I think game three, I was finally healthy enough to play. And then whatever happened, and Manny ended up getting pulled or whatever, I had the opportunity to get back in the net. So, between us, we were good friends, but also we pushed each other every day. And that's when you get a competition. Carolina's had one of those pretty much for most of the year, where they're pushing guys. Vancouver a little bit at the beginning of the year, and then the Markstrom sort of took the run with Thatcher behind him, pushing him every day, and Thatcher needing to get the net as a young guy. And I think it's a great problem to have if your organization has two great goalies. And fortunate enough for us in Minnesota, we were able to run and support one another, and the team played the same way with whoever was playing that. And that's another key. Like, you don't want to make a goalie change and then it hurts your team with them playing a little bit more defensively compared to a lot more offensive with a guy in that. And as much as people don't think it happens, it does. Guys play a little bit different in front of different goalies.
Actually, one last thing. Do you have thoughts on this upcoming series?
Well, I have to say it wild because I, you know, being an alumni and all, but I have to say it. If I didn't say that, then I'd be shot. But I think it's going to be a great series. It's going to go the distance. You know, when you're doing check marks, you can probably go down and split the check marks halfway through. So I think it's going to be a great series. It's going to be fun. And obviously game one's probably going to be a little rusty, but at the same time, it's going to be a lot of emotion. And, you know, from that 0-3 run, the Wild Canucks rivalry is pretty high. And, you know, I think the next year after that playoff series, we played them like 7 times in the month of October or something like that. So it really created a big rivalry, at least from Minnesota's perspective. So I think, you know, the people there, the city, the players who were there, Koivu, who was sort of learning it at the time, will be able to push the guys a little bit harder. And then, you know, Vancouver's young guys, I think are, I don't want to say it, but are going to do really well.
We appreciate it, Dwayne. He is Dwayne Rollison. Take care, and hopefully we can connect with you down the road here.
Yeah, it sounds good. Anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dwayne.
He is Dwayne Rollison of 600 plus games, and a lot to unpack there that we might carry on through the rest of the day when we do Sportsnet today. Vic Nizar, Israel Farrow filling in all the way till 4 o'clock here. Yeah, really interesting perspectives there on you know, just how the Goldie tandems will exist. I think it is a conversation we should explore later on, both here on Central and Sportsnet today. Just as you look across this, gun to your head, you know, which goalies should start and will they share it all?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a different version of a strategy, I think. And we saw it at times the last couple of seasons. And because of the circumstances of these playoffs and these play-in series, there's the potential for even more of that. And I think that Dwayne made a lot of really good points about the preparation that goes into that, the chemistry between goalie partners and getting a share of the net rather than the lion's share of the starts. And I think in Vancouver, where we know that Jacob Markstrom is going to be the guy, but if something goes wrong and he gets injured again, that, you know, Thatcher Demko's got the experience now to step in and have to play at a high level. And I think that's going to be a question across the NHL that we're going to see once the series start this weekend.
I will continue to tee up the series. Bick Nizar, Israel Fair. Also, game of takes today. Love it.
Let's go.
You love jumping in. You're a big fan of it. I know that, Izzy. So we'll get into all of that coming up here on Canucks Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome. Hours away. We're like less than 100 hours till Canucks playoff hockey. It's going to be ridiculous on Sunday. It kind of feels like, Izzy, it's building up to like a Super Bowl Sunday.
It sure does, man.
Right?
It's like we had the Pro Bowl on Wednesday. So yeah. It was, you know,
guys were trying just hard enough to be like, oh yeah, I'm still an all pro, guys.
Yeah, exactly. It was just sort of like, okay, you know, EP still got it, Quinn Hughes still got it. All right, we've seen enough. Now it's time for the big show.
And just to put this out there, because what happens on a Super Bowl Sunday, right? You wake up at 8 o'clock, and like 4 channels are like, all day programming. We're going to tell you the best story about the long snapper and the long snapper's best friend. And the train, like every story gets told. It's all day long. Well, wouldn't you know it, Sunday, here on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks, there's going to be shows all day long. Yeah, we're not going anywhere. We got you covered. Jamie Dodd, Joey Kenward in the morning, myself, Dan Riccio, mid-days, and then leading up straight to pregame, Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, take you right into the game, which, of course, has Brendan Batchelor, Corey Hirsch, also joining us on Sunday. Yannick Hansen, Ed Jovanovski, if you didn't hear, they will be part of our broadcast here on the Home of the Canucks. So lots going on Sunday. Hopefully it's a long run because we want to hear plenty from Hansen, plenty from Jovo, and they will be joining us for however long the run goes on. And should also point out these post-game shows, you keep calling, you keep texting, Sat and Andrew, they will keep talking. They do not go to sleep until you go to sleep. Unlimited post-game coverage. So we're all geeked up for playoff hockey, man. The whole city is. It's compounded by the fact that we're geeked up for hockey because it's been so long and it was taken away for us, and you almost overcompensate to appreciate it once again. But we got you covered. That's all I'm saying. It is pedal to the metal for coverage here on the Home of the Canucks Sportsnet 650. We should get into some of the series before we get to Game of Takes, because the big discussion is going to be, and it was for Game of Takes this week, is that final forward spot. It kind of feels like Michael Ferland has solidified his spot. It's that final spot, and it's Jake Virtanen, it's Brandon Sutter, it's Louis Erickson. And it's we keep talking about, and Zach McEwen, I forgot his name. We keep bringing it up, and a decision, it feels like, has been made. It feels like it's Brandon Sutter's to lose, but it feels like he did just enough or not enough on Wednesday that it creaks that door open for a Louis Erickson, because that feels the most like-for-like switch, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really, as much as Canucks fans probably don't want to hear that, is the way that the roster is structured. And they've got a pretty heavy emphasis on penalty killers. We talked to Brendan Batchelor yesterday, and he pretty much said the same. They are going to be looking at their penalty killing options. Brandon Sutter is a player, because he takes faceoffs and has experience killing penalties, is going to be in that spot. And it's going to be at the way it looks right now, for the most part, at 5-on-5, a fourth line winger role. And while Zach McEwen could bring an element to that at 5-on-5, you're not getting the penalty killing. Jake Virtanen's got the most skills from that group, and the highest upside, not even just long-term, but in like what he can do within a game to break a game open. But that's just not the way that line is utilized. They tend to be more defensive. They tend to be playing a lot more in their own zone. And that's certainly not where Virtanen's strengths are. But as you said, Bick, Sutter did not have a particularly impressive game, and there's some options and there's some possibility for some changes if game one doesn't go the Canucks' way.
Let's actually get into Game of Takes right now, and we'll expand upon what the alien Pope, who is the champion on the composite throne, and also what his competitor, you follow him on Twitter, at Pete is Neat. Pete will be the competitor for this week on the game show that is really sweeping the nation and captivating the hearts. It's Game of Takes.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
A lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
We beg of you to rally the realm, to support your cause, week in, week out. Many have risen, just as many have fallen. It is hard to sit atop the composite throne. We have yet to have a prolonged dynasty, or as they say in Game of Thrones, dynasty. I'm talking over a month long. May we see the foundation of one here the alien Pope winning last week, the leader of the Church of Pedersen, someone who can summon a crowd to support his cause? Or do we have a worthy competitor and a potential long-lasting member on the composite throne? It remains to be seen, but we get to the takes because that's what establishes it all. If you have a good take, you win. If you have a great take, you stay. And we check in with at Pete is Neat on Twitter. The competitor taking on the alien Pope. We asked who should get in for game one of those bubble players. Brandon Sutter, Louis Erickson, Jake Virtanen, or Zach McEwen. Pete is Neat. What do you say?
Who do I play against the Minnesota Wild? Not Jake Virtanen. And the person that made that decision was Jake Virtanen. All the guy does is coast. When guys are playing hard in practice, like McEwen, Erickson had a good camp supposedly, that makes the decision very obvious. It's very simple. How many chances does Jake Virtanen get? He hasn't seized any opportunities. Sure, he's got his goals for this season, but I don't think that's sustainable. Jake Virtanen is going to be traded by next season. You're going to see a third-round pick, if you're lucky. You want to have Bo Horvat go talk to Jake Virtanen during a play-in series because Jake can't have his crap together? You know who I would have in there? Louis Little Things Erickson. The guy's responsible. He's not going to have to be talked to by Bo. Bo can worry about other things. JT Miller's not going to go have to talk to him. JT Miller can focus on scoring. I'd love to see McEwen in there because I want him to get experience, but I just think having Louis Erickson in there as a penalty killer and to have out there for when the net is empty and he's going to seal the deal, that's the choice you make. At play-in series, you throw the contracts out the window. It doesn't matter if he's making $6 million a season. Who cares? Just have the guy out there who's most responsible, who's going to make that penalty kill better, and you can worry about your top six scoring the goals. So there you have it. My brain says Louis Erickson, my heart says McEwen, and everything else about me says not Jake Virtanen.
That's a take. That is a take. The most maligned Canuck since, what, maybe Mark Messier? A support for Louis Erickson from Pete is Neat. Who'd have thunk it? Although we're talking about being the 12th forward, so maybe most malign isn't valid to say. But hey, man, he much like Pete has claimed to his spot, it being the composite throne, Louis Erickson has claimed to a roster spot, potentially being the 12th forward. Is he?
I don't know, man. As we learned on Game of Thrones, and I think that Louis Erickson is living up to this. Chaos is a ladder, and he is absolutely ready to pounce into that 12th forward spot with his penalty killing prowess, his empty net magic skills. It's I'd be surprised, but I do enjoy the passion that Louis Erickson is all of a sudden someone that. You know what? He's not playing on the second line. There might be something he can bring to the table.
Dream scenario, killing penalty, late in the game, one goal lead, goalie pulled, and Louis Erickson's on the ice. That's what you want. Then again, he's got to get into the lineup for that to happen. So who does the alien Pope like to see in the lineup? We already know Elias Pettersson's first line center. But when we're talking on the bubble to start game one versus the Minnesota Wild this Sunday, which you can hear on Sportsnet 650, at Alien Pope 40, who do you cape for?
This was a very hard decision and maybe subject to change in game two, but I would want McEwen in my bubble. There's four reasons for this. Performance, what our requirements are, the support, and that unknown factor. First is performance. In the past five games, which feel like a lifetime ago, McEwen had seven shots and three goals. And he's also shown through dedication and hard work that he consistently can improve upon that. And some of you worry about the defensive side of things and that we may have a requirement to fill positions with Sutter or Erickson. I throw this at you. Even if Bo Horvat is taking the draws, which he may not be defensively minded, but he can win the draws, and it goes back to Olevi or Hughes, then we're looking pretty good. So I don't think we have a lot of requirement in defensive play to worry about. What we need is the support, and the support for the top lines, the top six. And we need to take attention away from them, and that is where McEwen can come in with a strong point. If he can consistently punish the opponent's teams for not giving the attention that he deserves, then they're going to have to give him a little bit more attention and pull it away from that top six. And his energy and his wild sense of play is something that will benefit us. Lastly is that unknown factor. Well, there's a lot of tape on Vertanen and all of his levels of consistency or inconsistency. There is lots of tape on Sutter and Erickson. Everyone knows what they're getting. But with McEwen, he's consistently growing and getting better. And there's not a lot of tape on what he can bring us, which is why he should be in for the first game. He's going to give us that edge. They may learn real quick on what to do or how to defend against him. But in that first game, that's where we need him. So he deserves this opportunity to prove us right, and he deserves this opportunity to have experience in the playoffs. So go Canucks, go, and may Petey bring us many holy red lights.
That's the Alien Pope, at Alien Pope 40, the leader of the Church of Pedersen, speaking Zach McEwen into the lineup, which is fair. Look, I think he's got that truculence that might work in the playoffs. I do this every Friday now. We hear the takes. I like both of them, and I gotta sit and deliberate and listen to them both back, and we'll post them online at Sportsnet 650. You determine who sits atop the throne come Monday, and we will speak to that person on Monday to continue and further the conversation. But it's going to be tough. Travis Green, it looks like he's made his decision, but it feels like it's an ongoing decision also.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I think, dependent on situation and the
all injury, the all of that, of course.
Yeah, and all the players involved bring something specific to the table. Right now, if it's Brandon Sutter, the emphasis there is on the penalty kill. But I think the Zach McEwen has that X factor as a fourth line guy, throwing the body, maybe being able to lay out a big hit. Probably being able to get out maybe on a rush and score a goal. Anytime you can get a goal from the fourth line, that really changes the math in the game. That's a huge goal. So it'll be certainly not what decides the series, but it's just another aspect of putting this lineup together and trying to get a winning lineup together for this Canucks team.
Usually on Game It Takes, we encourage you to, you know, gather support, win the composite throne by garnering votes. Sometimes it works in the opposite way, where you can win just because somebody doesn't like the other person's take. Brendan in Nanaimo, 650-650, chiming in. Mott, Beagle, Sutter, Erickson, Roussel, McEwen. None of those players had 10 goals this year. I don't think the Canucks need six forwards who only specialize in killing penalties. Vertanen going to come in with something to prove. Pete's take is poop. So it sounds like Brandon's already a vote against Pete. Brandon in Coquitlam. Louis should be in over Sutter. Sutter looked a bit off. If Louis and Sutter had similar contracts, be a no-brainer, but people can't get over Louis's contract. 650-650, keep sending in the thoughts. It's also how you can enter in for next week's Game of Takes as well. We should get to some predictions for this series, though, is it here on Canucks Central. Pick Nazar, Israel Fair. You know, we've had 4 months to think about it, really 2 months when it came down to the nitty gritty. But this always felt like the most logical conclusion of these two teams meeting together. When you consider all that you've heard, all that you have read, all that you have talked about and thought about, where do you ultimately come out for this series? Canucks, Minnesota Wild.
For me, it's the series for the Canucks to win. Gone back and forth between 4 and 5, and I've settled on Canucks in 5. So get ready for some dramatics.
There's gonna be some tense moments then. If we're getting
ready
five.
For a Canucks series victory,
I've thought about this so much too, man. It's I really believe in talent over experience, right? A popular phrase I like to use is experience is only necessary for the unqualified. And when you are qualified, like Elias Pettersson, like Quinn Hughes, like Brock Besser, and also like Bo Horvat, I know he's dipped his toe in playoffs, but you know, 5 years is a long time to be away from it. So all of those players are very qualified, and I don't think they're going to have to rely on experience because their talent supersedes necessary experience. And they, especially Pettersson and Hughes, you see them in games learn on the fly and apply what teams are trying to do to them and succeed. And I think we'll see that here. The important thing here is, yes, it's a difficult matchup. Minnesota, you know, can play defensively and can slow the tempo down, but they're not exactly a fast team. They can be physical, but the biggest deficit the Canucks have attribute-wise is team speed. And outside of Kevin Fiala, there's not a lot of guys who are going to push the tempo and put defenders on their heels for the Canucks. So I look at this and I say, Canucks in four, if they truly show up and some rust goes off, honestly, I could see Canucks in three. The goaltending doesn't give me a lot of confidence to say someone will backstop Minnesota of their way out. But just for margin of error and all that sort of stuff, we will do Canucks in four and marching on into the official Stanley Cup playoffs once again, round one. They got a chance here. They got a chance. And I do want to talk about, we'll do this on the other side when we do Sportsnet Today. We should talk about sleeper teams in both conferences because, believe it or not, I do believe your Vancouver Canucks might be a sleeper team. We will get into all of that. Keep your comments coming, 650, 650. Also, get your votes in online at Sportsnet 650 for Game of Takes. We'll post it up in moments. And you will see who sits atop the comments at the throne. Spik Nazar, Israel Fair, a lot coming up here on Sportsnet Today. Harmon Dial will join us during Sportsnet Today here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.